If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements, and we're going to be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hola.
We also have a special guest, Roy Wilburn from Poway Gardens. You keep changing the name.
I know. It's like you used to be able to say this. It changes it every 3 weeks.
Yeah. Every 2 years.
Every 2 years? Okay.
I like to just call Roy Farmer Roy.
Farmer Roy. Yeah, that's how we usually refer to him here as well.
That's what my friends call me.
We do have a garden class today in Poway. It's going to be Bonsai Basics with Richard Wright. Excellent class. If you are interested in that hobby, that would be a good one to check out. Some of the things that are coming in, we mentioned last week, we have the sleeved fruit trees have started to arrive in both stores. Christmas trees are going to be here on the 25th and December 3rd. Roses are due around the 16th of December. And fruit trees, the bare root fruit trees, are due sometime around between Christmas and New Year's. So keep an eye out for those. As that stuff starts to arrive, we will let everybody know as well.
So, Ken, just real quick, you'd mentioned that we have the Bonsai Basics with Richard Wright today, but there is no class in San Diego.
There is no class in San Diego, and Richard's class is the last class of the year in either of the stores. There are no classes for the month of December.
We pick up January 4th, 2025.
Yeah, I still
wow.
Still can't wrap my head around that one, that the year has gone that quickly. So, you know what, since Roy is here, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what you do, Roy?
Well, for the past 14 and a half years, I've been the director of horticulture at Poway Gardens in Poway, California. We're off Monta Vista Road. We're a memory care community. We're 30 plus acres. We have, all of our residents have Alzheimer's or some form of dementia. Mm-hmm. And we utilize horticulture to enrich their lives in many ways. And we also run a food bank garden that's run by benevolent volunteers in the Poway area. They come every day. They work in the garden. They raise about 8,000 pounds of produce for families in need in the Poway, Arby, and Rancho Penasquitos area. And we have... In our little gardens, we have five little gardens, roughly 40, 50-foot rows, where we grow constantly fresh, organic, nutritious produce for our residents' dining pleasures. And we'll do about 25,000 pounds a year. We've been doing that for a while, so that's encouraging. We're on the right track.
So the 25,000 pounds, that's in addition to the 8,000?
The 8,000 is a total separate entity that goes to families in need. The 25,000 that I grow in my gardens, which is still on the same properties, goes to our kitchen.
That's amazing.
And we use it for promotions and freebies for looky-loos and people that... tours and things like that.
And that's all year long, right?
All year long. Right now, yeah. Yeah, all year long.
Well, I know during tomato season, you're kind enough to bring in tomatoes for us.
It's still tomato season.
And the tomatoes that you guys grow are just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. I was a commercial grower in Baja for 20 years, and I've tomato juice runs through my veins.
You had told me one time you were involved with the with Celebrity Tomatoes, was it not?
Yeah, Celebrity was named on our ranch. Our ranch in Baja was right next door to Pito Seed Company, seed production place. And, you know, you were in the world of tomatoes, you're always looking for the best tomato. And so I had a lot of contacts with all the seed companies because probably because I spoke English. And we were at the cutting edge of all the trialing of varieties to sell to the public, for the seed companies to sell to the public. And Celebrity was named after we did some trialing on our ranch there. And it's still a really awesome variety. There is a new improved version of Celebrity with probably better size. I don't know. I'll find out. My go-to variety of tomatoes, I can't get the seed anymore. So I'll be getting to start trialing new varieties for next year. But yeah,
that was... What was the go-to tomato for you previously?
The variety from called BHN 1021. That was for my early seed. We'll grow like 500-600 tomato plants a year. And that's of the 25,000 pounds of produce we kick out, about half of that's tomatoes. So, and that was just a great variety in the spring here. And so just a key for you folks that buy seeds online. I used to get the variety from Johnny Selected Seed, which is a very reputable seed company. But all of a sudden they discontinued that variety and I had to look at other sources. And then I went and made the mistake of getting supposed BHN 1021s from Amazon. And I don't know what the hell that variety was. It was actually a mixture of varieties. All of them were horrible. We'll still have plenty of tomatoes.
Now you're growing operation in Mexico. Is that down in the San Quintin area? Or?
That's where we started, in San Quintin. I married a farmer's daughter. I went to school at UCSD and worked at the bookstore. And there was a lovely lady that worked in our offices there. And she said her father was looking for somebody with a little science background. And I loved Baja. That's when it was really awesome.
Back in the day, yeah, San Quintin. I've been fishing in San Quintin since awesome. 1970, and awesome sport fishing. Yeah. Isla San Martin and all the big yellowtail.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I did a lot of fishing. And then we ended up pioneering in other farms all the way down to the La Paz area.
Really?
So, and we had a small plane, so we got to land in little spots and do some fishing that you only can dream about. So
your background in science wasn't in agriculture. You're a math guy.
Math and economics and drama.
The drama is starting to make sense. Okay.
Yeah, gotcha. Marine biology too, but yeah, I have a love for science and math.
I try my best to live a drama-free life. Yeah.
So it's brassica season now, but if we could touch on tomatoes for a moment, because you have some, and you mentioned your favorite for the early season. What do you transition to throughout the growing season?
We use a variety called Mountain Fresh, also from Johnny's, which gives you huge size. I mean, I'm holding that's a good amount of 10-ounce or 9-ounce right now.
That's about the size of a baseball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it just gives really good size. It doesn't set nearly as much, but they're big, fat, beautiful tomatoes. I've won tomato contests with that one. And they're delicious. Our tomatoes are delicious. I don't know what I'm doing, because when you're a commercial grower, that's the last thing that of importance. We don't care what they taste like, as long as they're big and they can make it to Boston, we're happy.
Yeah. And as I recall, you and I were talking about tomatoes one time a while back, and you said you typically grow determinant varieties.
Determinant as opposed to indeterminate.
So yeah. You get the crop, you get it over with, and you get it out and start something
and
else.
And we do successive planting. So we incorporate that idea of successive planting throughout the growing season. I used to start in mid-January, and after getting nipped too many times by frost, I just threw in the towel. And somewhere around February 15th, March 1st, we'll start with our first ones. And just a word to the public, that's when you want to get your first tomatoes in. And then somewhere around April, we'll plant more, and May we'll plant more. And then I hit the gardens hard in June and July to give us a nice flurry of tomatoes at the end of the year, striving to have caprese salad for Thanksgiving dinner. So
very nice.
We won that one this year.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, those are gorgeous tomatoes.
Yeah, they're good. They're,
Hey, Roy, you have to plant in the same beds.
Yes.
Right. Because you're not moving your crop. And so conventional wisdom is that you don't plant Solanaceae like tomato in the same area. So how do you get around that, preventing nematodes and such?
So, yeah, that philosophy of not planting in the same spot is because of nematodes. Nematode is a microscopic wireworm that just rampant. And if they're like rats and you got them. If you've been gardening in your garden, you have nematodes. They're there. And so when we plant, we apply beneficial nematodes. I go to Walter Anderson's little refrigerator there where the ladybugs are. And I apply the beneficial nematodes at planting. And then probably, I think the real key is to use nematode resistant varieties. Yeah. And so, does that mean you will never have nematodes by using? No, but you will get a crop. You will get a crop. And the story I tell people in my classes is, one year somebody gave me a bunch of tomatoes called Delicious. They were, I don't know, sounded good. And, and I planted a row, 63 tomato plants in that row, and I did not get one tomato offer. Oh, and then, so I pulled them all out, and then I put Celebrity, which is a nematode resistant variety, and I got like 1,000 pounds out of that row.
Wow.
So I tell people to use the beneficial nematodes, but try to stick to nematode resistant varieties. The only area in our gardens, we have an intergenerational garden club where we have local homeschool kids and preschoolers that come work in the garden. They learn two things. They learn how to garden, and then they learn the benefits of volunteering, because then we get together with our residents, their grandmas and their grandpas, and then we do activities for the rest of the time there. But we'll put cherry tomatoes in our children's garden. We put like 48 plants in every year. We put like 11 varieties in there. And then, so the greatest day of the year for the kids is planting those. The second greatest day of the year is somewhere in July, where we have our annual taste test. Mm. And I'm sure Cornell would turn their nose up to the panel of judges that we use. But it's hilarious and it's fun. And if you've never grown tomatoes and you're trying to get your kids to enjoy vegetables, cherry tomatoes is a great start.
Excellent. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements, and our special guest, Farmer Roy from Poway Gardens. And we've been talking about the incredible job that you do growing vegetables for Poway Gardens, and also for the bank, or for the food bank. And we had just got through talking about your process for growing tomatoes. And what are you doing now? What's
right now, we're planting every week. We plant, again, we have roughly 40, 50 foot rows. Every week we plant three rows, roughly, sometimes two, sometimes four. And every week we, at this time of year, we plant broccoli, cauliflower. We plant twice as much broccoli as we do cauliflower, because cauliflower is huge and heavy and big, and broccoli, everybody loves broccoli. People should really enjoy cauliflower though too. And then we incorporate lettuce in between all of our plantings. And so that way, 4 to 5 weeks down the line, we have lettuce every week for our residents. And then somewhere between 65 to 90 days, we have broccoli and cauliflower from those rows. And that just keeps going. That's, again, it's the whole idea of successive planting.
And successful.
If you're successful. Yeah. And and we just keep going, and we have we also add cabbage, bok choy, snow peas, snap peas, things like that. So we have a new head chef right now, and he's I just say, hey, listen, you want to sit down and talk about, you know, what I can grow? And he said, just bring it. Just bring it. We'll use it. So I love that. So,
now, do you start everything from? Well, you don't start everything from seed because you get stuff from us.
The only thing I get from you guys is lettuce because it's uniform, and I know exactly how many I need, so I can purchase that many. And but everything else we do by seed. And so again, in our hort therapy program classes that we offer our residents, they in one way or another have touched every plant that goes to my gardens and to the food bank gardens. So it's kind of hard for 80-year-old ladies with Alzheimer's to seed broccoli. Seed's pretty small. I can barely do it still. And all the bigger seed stuff they do. But then we seed trays of like 128 cavity trays of broccoli and cauliflower. Again, every week we seed X amount. And we take them out of the trays after about 3 or 4 weeks. And then we put those in 6 packs with potting soil. And in about a month after that, they're ready for the garden. So they've touched and been with everything that we grow. And then when spring comes around, they're very adept at seeding squash and things like that.
Yeah, I'd love to find out about what you start with in your beds. First, the soil, what mix you're using. And then secondly, every time you plant, because you're very intensive. Mm-hmm. What are you doing at planting time to replenish your soil, you know, compost, fertilizer, that kind of protocol?
You're a master in the world of gardening, and you've touched on probably the most important thing in your gardens, and that's soil prep, preparing your soil for planting. And it doesn't matter if the row that I'm ready to plant is broccoli or tomatoes, it receives the same amount of love and the same attention. And we apply 4 things, composted chicken manure, worm castings, and then probably the most important thing after that, the 4th ingredient is some pre-plant fertilizer, balanced pre-plant fertilizer, like a 4-4-4 or 5-5-5, organic, of course. If it's 15-15-15, you're off the grid and we don't talk to you because that's that's conventional. The plants will grow really well. But those 4 things, without even thinking, that's every... And so again, in my 40, 50 foot rows, every row will probably have about 3 different looks to it throughout the course of the year. Maybe a broccoli in September, cauliflower in November, and tomatoes in February, something like that. But that gets, and we've been doing this for over 14 years. So even our crappy, can I say that? It's soil. soil in Poway, our beds are, I think they're pretty juicy.
So, and you're in ground beds, not raised beds.
No, in ground.
Yeah,
in ground.
We've toured it, and it's an interesting thing to see, and it's very productive. Everything just. Oh, and what about spacing? There's a intensive planting, but how close do you plant your plants?
Yeah, so all of our rows, we to irrigate, we use drip tape. So if you can imagine a bed that's like roughly 18 inches wide, a few inches tall, and it's got a tape down the middle that irrigates every 8 inches. In a very uniform, precise manner. And so we get a beautiful wedding pattern. So things like broccoli, cauliflower, we plant at 18 inch. Everything you want to plant in your garden, there's a plant habit and plant spacing that's always recommended. But our broccoli and cauliflower, we do 18 inches on both sides of the tape in a zigzag fashion so that when they grow, it just makes this beautiful hedge. And... 18 inches there. And then if I have a 50 foot row, I can usually get like 67 head plants of broccoli in it. So then we immediately come back. We go to our friends at Walter Anderson's and pick up lettuce. And then we'll put lettuce at 50% of the population of that row. So every other space, I'll put it lettuce. You could do it. Everyone, but that would be, the kitchen would kill me. That's just like way too much lettuce. it's just a formula. We just, we know that like after we plant the lettuce in that row, if it was planted roughly at the same time as the broccoli and cauliflower, about 45 days into it, we'll get a nice head of lettuce. It's all romaine. And then that gives us a chance to get those out, take the weeds out, and do an additional fertilization if necessary.
Do you fertilize the plants after they've been planted for a while?
Depending on what plants is. This time of year, broccoli and cauliflower, if it is a 65-day variety, somewhere around day 45, you're going to get excited that if the gophers or the rats haven't eaten it, you'll start to see a little head forming in the middle of the plant. So then we follow with a high shot of nitrogen to kind of really kick it in the pants and try to get the biggest head. I mean, you're striving for the biggest head you can get because you're only going to get one head of cauliflower, and a big head of cauliflower is better than a little head of cauliflower.
What's your nitrogen go to? Fish emulsion, or what do you use?
I tell people to use fish emulsion. It's a 5-1-1 and it's super easy to apply. So if you take the weeds out, take your lettuce out or whatever's in there with it, get it out, clear it out, and lay that, and then a little shot of water and work it into the soil. And they give you a chance to if you have any aphid problems, it's a good time to put a little spray nozzle on your hose and just give a nice heavy shot in the middle of the plant to blow off anything that might be hanging around there.
Speaking of aphids, what is your water. Go-to pest control? Water. Just blast them off?
Well, right now we're transitioning from warm to cool season. Mm-hmm. So in a couple months ago, a lot of the crops that we had were covered with black shade netting to keep the 100-degree temperature off the plants. And then, but now we're putting a white floating row cover to give more heat to the plants as we dip into the 60s. And we'll keep that on there for the first 2/3 of the life of the growing of those plants. And so I think we're getting a really good insect control with that. But water is good for aphids, and if need be, insecticidal soap that you can get at all of your friendly nurseries.
Interesting. I would think that aphids and broccoli are
aphids and problem. Cauliflower. Like I brought a beautiful head of cauliflower and I had to rinse it off.
But Brussels sprouts are the tough one for me.
Yeah, you know, people ask me about growing Brussels sprouts, and yeah, we all love Brussels sprouts in November and December, and the only drag about them is they take like 120 days, yeah. And I thought
it's a long
time.
And then they get so dang tall. How are you going to cover them? And then, yeah, and in San Quintin, where I was growing tomatoes and strawberries, if you didn't grow tomatoes and strawberries, you were probably a Brussels sprout grower. And you'd wake up in the morning and you could smell the Metamyphidivorus, whatever the chemical is that they use, the conventional chemical.
I remember one time I went up to Irvine Meadows to see a concert, and we decided we're going to stay in Irvine rather than drive home after the concert that night. And then right next to the railroad tracks along the 5 is an old grain elevator.
Yeah.
And they converted it into a hotel. So they they put floors in the silos and cut windows in the, it was cast in place concrete, like a honeycomb structure, but right behind it, I don't think it's there anymore now. But right behind it was a huge field where they were growing beans. And I remember we came back to the hotel from the concert, and the organophosphate reek was permeating the air. Yeah. It was really strong.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was malathion or what, but it definitely had that organophosphate smell to it.
Yeah, if you could smell it, it's not organic.
Well, fish emulsion you can smell, and that's
organic. Well, that's pretty stinky.
I have a question for you. You'd mentioned when you were talking about broccoli, you said if rats haven't gotten it.
Yeah.
So what's your control for rats? And we talked last week a lot about rats.
Rodents, period, are, you know, a big problem this time of year. And gophers seem to be our main nemesis right now. I've got an epidemic. But you just got to be smarter and more tenacious than they are. Rats, the old Victor traps work well for me.
Roy, hold that thought. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more talking about rat control in your garden right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I am Ken Anderson, along with George Allman, Joan Clemenson, our special guest, Farmer Roy Wilburn from Poway Gardens. As we went into the break, we were talking about rodent control, and we had gotten to the subject of rats.
Rats were a real problem for me last year. The gopher problem I have this year is taken over. So I don't have many rats right now, but rat control, you got the ratinator, but that's, you know, the ratinator, the old Victor traps with peanut butter work well for me. And then we also have little small live habitat traps that you can get at local nurseries. And you just got to put the stuff in there and you got to check them. You just can't think that you've killed the problem without constantly monitoring and measuring them. And with the gophers, we use the old Maccabee traps. We use sticky traps. Every trap that we can get off the shelf, we try, and we'll get there. We get all happy here as it gets really cold and they burrow down to like 6 feet and you forget about them and then they come
until
back
spring.
Out. Yeah, then they come back out the hole in spring and take out your plants.
But, you know, you talk about the Maccabee trap. That's a trap that those have been around as long as I,
yeah,
as long as I've
over
been
100
around.
Years.
Yeah.
It's a gruesome little thing, but
yeah,
they're incredibly effective.
Very effective if you insert them in the hole properly. The most important thing is check the YouTube video out so you don't impale your finger. Get them down there, and it's very logical. But you have to check them. You just have to check them. Just don't think your problem's going to go away all of a sudden. You got to, and then wash your traps. Wash your traps.
I heard that as well. Yeah. And then the other tip for the Maccabee trap is on the spring end of it, tie a string or a small rope onto it and
little,
stake it.
We sting, and we have our little. What
flag
we call
or
stables,
right?
Stables, and yeah, we know where they are.
Right. Yeah.
Plus, they get stolen. Coyotes will come and take it away.
Yeah,
so it's a waste of $12 every one.
Yeah, and well, or worse was first time Habhart trap I had. I had quite a rabbit problem at that time and squirrels. So I had outside all of our gardens are fenced, but I had it outside, and that was like a little lunchbox treat for the local coyote. The whole trap was gone. This little 4 foot trap was gone.
I like to say the only use that I ever used Dawn dishwashing liquid, which is sort of the farmer's almanac or you know, the backyard remedy for everything, is Dawn dishwashing liquid, which don't do that, folks. It's terrible for your plants. It takes the cuticle off the leaf, all the rest. But I use it to wash my traps.
Yeah.
Because it cuts the grease really well. And basically everything that you're trying to wash off that trap, let's just say that it's some greasy body fluid from some kind of a rodent. And so you want that to be cut and make that it's dissuading their friends, right? So that's the one use for Dawn dishwashing liquid.
It works good on birds too.
Mm. For oil.
Oh, that's true.
In oil spill areas, the Dawn dishwashing.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
But not for your plants.
No.
Yeah, yeah, I was thinking, how am I going to put that?
Yeah.
So, and Roy, my second question was, we were talking about tomatoes, and you said that
everything
this time
comes
of year,
back to tomatoes, folks.
Well, no. You were talking about it, and now it's winter. You know, we're putting in this winter crop. And I've listened to you countless times in classes. You do a lot of classes for us and other places. And one of the things you always ask people, how many people are growing winter tomatoes? And you'll get a handful and you'll shame them.
Yeah.
And so obviously your opinion is don't, but why not?
Well, the main reason is wait till spring. You're going to get, that's when you're going to get the big bounty, the beautiful tomatoes. They like 75 degree weather. They could handle our 100 degree weather if you take care of them right. And use that space in your garden for your fall winter stuff. We all have tomatoes. If you got a garden, you got tomatoes, you got peppers, you got zucchini, you got all those things. But don't run out of gas in October, November. We start all of our brassicas and fall plantings mid August, which is a little early, but there's nothing more beautiful than a garden that's full of broccoli, cauliflower, lettuce. People that don't grow and they see your gardens, they just totally blown away because they're just not used to it. And you can, it's a tremendous, you can do the very productive crops in this time of year, and your family will like it too. We, yeah, that's, I win flower shows. There's every garden club in Southern California has a flower show or a plant sale or something going on in April and May. And I win every year with things like lettuce and broccoli. And the first, you know, I'm a member of the Poway Valley Garden Club and been a member for many years. And we have a beautiful flower show plant sale every year. And the first year I joined, I know very little about roses and things like that. So I entered 3 heads of purple cauliflower, and I beat out like 400 rosarians and Irish growers and succulent growers, because I think the judges just come along and they say, wow, you know, and then you could do this. You could do this very easily. I mean, it's easier than growing the tomatoes, that's for sure, and peppers.
When I'm doing garden consultations, one of the frequent questions I get, people will say, well, what should I be growing in my home garden? And so my advice always is grow the things you can't get at the store that are pristine. So for instance, why would you grow onions? I can get onions for $5 a bag. Forget the onions. But what I want, sugar snap peas, Cascadia, sugar daddy, you know, where you go out. And here's the thing with the homegrown veggies. I read once, whether this, you can maybe elucidate on this, Roy, but I read that when you are picking, I think it was maybe I heard this from Tom Chino, Chino's Farms. Mm. He said, when you're picking things like sugar snap peas, the very first day after harvest, the sugar level drops from that little bit of a veggie by 25%.
Oh, wow.
And then every day thereafter, you lose about 10% of the sugars. And what really makes those sugar snap peas is that burst of sweet, sweet sugar. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you put stuff in the refrigerator a week later and it tastes starchy, you know. And so raise the stuff that costs $5 a pound at the store if you could get it. I mean, you can't go buy pristine sugar peas or snow peas. Grow those things in your garden and let the onions and all that stuff be raised by the other mass producing farmers.
Yeah, the kids in our intergenerational garden club, we talked about the cherry tomatoes. I mean, that's a great way to get them started. And the rule of thumb is they come in the first 30 minutes, they just forage. I mean, little tiny kids just love to forage and they know exactly what to do. And the rule of thumb is, one in the mouth, two in the bag. One in the mouth, two in the bag. And they'll just sit there. They'll even grab the grain ones and eat them and get all excited. And then when we don't have the cherry tomatoes in, hopefully we have the snow peas and the snap peas. And you eat them right there. And it's very cathartic. You just kind of walking down the row and you pull and eat and pull and eat. And
another great snack for kids. My kids, when they were young, we would do shelling peas. And I'm not really crazy about peas on the plate, cooked.
Right.
But my gosh, if you've never tasted shelling peas straight out of the shell, it is like having nuts or something. But they're sweet and crunchy, and they're phenomenal.
Yeah,
they're far better than anything you'll ever get in a can or frozen.
No kidding.
Yeah, I love growing those too.
Melanie, who's British, one of her favorite things are mushy peas, typically get
those
it with
are the ones in the can. Right?
I don't know where they come from, but they typically, it's traditionally served with fish and chips over
peas and chips.
In England, and actually there's a restaurant on Poway Road that does fish and chips, and she can get mushy peas with her fish and chips there.
I'll go for the fish. I'll go for the chips. You didn't turn me on to the other one.
Oh, she loves them. She loves them. It's funny. You know, at the Del Mar Fair, at the farm at the Del Mar Fair, where they bring the kids in over there. One of the crops that they grow to get kids interested in it is radishes, because they germinate
21 days.
They germinate almost within hours after you put them in the ground, and they grow very quickly.
Yeah, they can do it. If you get pelleted radish seed, it's very easy to manipulate for children and people 80 years of age. And They are quick gratification, 21 days. You get a radish unless you grow in the watermelon ones. They take about 45 days. But on the same note, carrots, kids.
Oh, yeah. Love,
they won't even wash them. You know,
that's how I eat them when I pull them out of the garden. Brush it off.
Get extra minerals that way.
Do you direct sow anything in your gardens, or is everything done?
We direct seeded the snow peas and the snap peas. We'll direct seed when it's time for some of the kids. We'll go, where are the carrots? Okay, well, here we go. We'll do carrots. We'll do some radishes. We'll direct seed those beets. You can direct seed very easily. That seed's very big. And but again, if you're direct seeding, I highly recommend try to get pelleted seed. It's an inert clay material around the seed, because if you've ever seen a carrot seed, you have better eyes than I do, because they're microscopic. And same with lettuce too. But these the pelletons are about an eighth of an inch in diameter. So when you buy like a radish seed bag, it'll say on it there's enough seed for 50 feet of seeding. And the kids will take two steps and they'll go, come into the bag. You know? So like 3 weeks down the line, some guys got to go through there and thin all that out. And I hate thinning. So you can get pelleted and you say, okay, two fingers down, put a seed, two fingers, two at a seed, every inch, bum, 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 down the road. And then that's makes my life a lot easier.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, you look like you had a really important question.
You wanted to know about the tomatoes, right?
Oh,
why we didn't want to do winter. You also say that they're very prone to spider mites in the winter, right? And carry over into the summer.
Well, our problems with spider mites are generally July and August, but we haven't had it in the last few years. But again, utilize that ground for hell, growth celery or bok choy, you know, something easy in there, but nice and green, grows, feed your family. It works really well. And I get a little leery about varieties that are cold season varieties, because the varieties came from Russia. grow tomato, and there's a time for everything, you know.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman, John Clements, and our special guest, Roy Wilburn from Poway Gardens. During the break, we were talking about fruit tree season, and it is just starting to take off. We had mentioned that the sleeved fruit trees are starting to have arrived, come in.
Right.
And
a large selection. We have a lot of the caneberries, blackberries, boysenberries, raspberries, goji berries, which aren't really a caneberry, but goji berries.
Do you like goji berries?
Yeah, dried. They're pretty.
They're good dried, but it's like a tomato. I mean, it is. It's a Solanaceae, but it's not, you know, everyone thinks berry and you're expecting this burst of good sweet, and it's not there. We have pomegranates, and John, I know you're a big fan of the dwarf mulberries.
We have some of
the smaller mulberries in.
Yep.
Big fan. We got a big old mulberry tree. Big weeping one. It's a beautiful tree up there. I remember seeing that.
The kids come by and the residents love it, and they love to get in. And then we'll lose a couple kids who will be hiding underneath it.
And just foraging inside there. I was going to just finish up. There are blueberries, olives, and figs as well, and a bunch of different varieties within there.
Yeah,
you know, it's interesting. I was talking to James, our store manager here, and Adams, who coordinates all of our fruit tree purchases for the store. We were talking about blueberries, and 30 years ago, there were no blueberries. Nobody grew blueberries, and then I think it was Monrovia started growing them. And when we first started getting blueberries, the only two varieties that we could get were Sharp Blue and O'Neill.
Yep.
And that was it. And we sold the heck out of them. We could sell as many as we could get in. And now I can't even tell you how many different varieties of blueberries there are on the market.
Lots.
And there's tons of them, and they grow super easy. They're really easy to grow, and they produce like crazy. You can grow them in containers too, and you usually
grow better in containers.
I was going to say, I think it's much easier to control the pH and grow them in a container.
Yeah, and they do like acid. They do like acid soil. But I've told people, I said, you know, if you get a blueberry and get it in a container where it's happy, you'll almost pay for it.
Yeah.
Almost pay for itself in one season. Yeah.
That was a $1 million idea of mine in Baja when strawberries were starting. We grew a lot of strawberries when we were taking control of the strawberry industry from Santa Ana South, but was to put blueberries in it because the low chill varieties were just starting to come in, and I was going, this sounds like a winner. Just never moved on it, but.
So there are commercial blueberry farms in Palma Valley that do very, very well. Oh, yeah. I've got some farmer friends there, and they do quite well. But it's the variety, low chill, you're getting the southern high bush hybrids. That's really what you need. But I like to do them in half oak barrels. And often I'll put two in a half oak barrel. And then, you know, the classic mix that Tom Spellman and Dave Wilson recommend, which is a third of medium bark, a third peat moss, and a third of like azalea camellia mix. I like to add about 10% sand.
That's right. You're a fan of sand.
I love good all-purpose sand in that. And then don't forget, what's our biggest problem for me as a grower? My biggest problem is our awful water. Mm-hmm. It's very salty. So add a couple of good handfuls of iron sulfate or some soil sulfur and keep that up. And then I learned a trick from Tom Nuccio years ago of Nuccio camellias and azaleas. And Tom always told me he fertilizes all of his acid-loving stuff with cottonseed meal. And what is cottonseed meal? It's about a 6.2 or 3.1.
I use that as well on our blueberries.
Yeah, it acidifies as it breaks down in the soil. And so it's a terrific fertilizer.
It's a slower release too.
And it's a slower release.
That's good.
And you can get, if you've got a huge blueberry farm, you can get that from the feed store because they put it in cattle feed. But I'll tell you what, having fresh blueberries from your own backyard is a real joy.
This past year, we didn't have quite the crop that we had the year before. So I'm hoping it's a little bit cyclic this year, but usually we have a pretty good crop and we have 5 or 6 different varieties. And you need different varieties for pollination to increase your production.
And you can freeze them too.
Oh, you can, sure, absolutely. Yeah.
So if you can't eat them all fresh, just pop them in a bag and throw them in the freezer.
No problem in there.
Well, that's the thing I would do with, the reason I love the dwarf mulberry is I would have friends come over. I had a big one, 5 years old tree. They would come over with a 5 gallon bucket and say, could I pick? and in an hour and a half, you could get a 5 gallon bucket about every day.
That's a lot of mulberries.
So we freeze them and then add them into smoothies and things. Plus I like those because they're a little more tart. They taste a little bit more like a blackberry rather than the Pakistanis, which I would liken to maybe a muskier flavor. There's just this.
Now I like the Pakistan for this reason. Okay. They're larger and I get more in each handful.
That's true. Right?
The others you have to pick. There's the Persians are much smaller.
Yeah.
So you have to pick, you know, 30 of them to get a handful as opposed to 4 large Pakistan. Yeah. I'm a lazy guy, so it works better for me.
Have you ever heard of applying like vinegar to water to lower the pH?
I just don't think there's really enough acidification that's going on with that. And when people say, well, you don't need to fertilize. I have friends that say, you don't need to fertilize Proteaceae. Well, every Proteaceae grower I know, Mel Resendez and Joe and Julie Walker, they all fertilize. And if you think the commercial folks are fertilizing, why wouldn't you think you'd need to fertilize?
Right. Yeah.
Same thing with the acidification. Even my friend Joe O'Connell, who owns Australian Native Plants in Ventura, she puts soil sulfur on her beds in her garden, which is in a riverbed, every year. So I figure if the pros have to do it, then what makes home gardeners think they don't have to do it?
What makes the flowers really big?
Well,
I think the soil sulfur is important. Too many people try to chase pH with fertilizers because they'll buy a fertilizer like the Dr. Earth makes, the acid lovers, and they'll throw that on their blueberries and then they'll test their pH and it's still too high. So they'll throw some more and you'll burn your plants eventually.
Right.
Too much blood meal or whatever. So you have to use soil sulfur to bring it down.
Well, now's a good time prior to the torrential rains that we will receive here
eventually.
Hopefully.
it's interesting. You talk about acidifying the soil. We have the exact opposite problem they do back east, where they have really acidic soil. So they're constantly liming soil.
My dad limed all the time.
Yeah. I've never lived back east, but from what I've heard, it's a pretty constant thing.
That said, we had blueberries growing in the field across the street because it was so acidic where I grew up. Just walk out and eat walking through the woods.
Well, that's where they like Washington and Michigan.
Yeah.
And
you know, it's talking about mulberries. Many years ago, we had an employee who worked for us who his diet was almost 100% fruit. That was what he liked to eat was fruit. And he came walking in the store one day, and it looked like he had just ripped a small animal apart with his bare hands. So I panicked. I couldn't figure out what happened, and I asked him, and he said, "Oh, well, we had that big blueberry or big mulberry tree out back." And he said, "I picked a bunch of them and I squeezed them for juice." Well, his hands were purple for days afterwards. They had stained his skin so bad.
Now's the time to plant your blueberries, right? I mean, your blackberries and your raspberries.
Yeah, all of that stuff just came
all,
in.
Yeah, all that stuff.
All the cane berries. It used to be that all the berries that we got were thorny varieties, mm-hmm. thorny varieties. And now there's a number of thornless varieties that are out there. The one that pops into my head, mm-hmm. Black Satin.
Black Satin is great. I think my favorite of the thornless is Triple Crown. And they're huge berries. I'd have mm-hmm. 2 or 3 inch berries at Christmas time
mm-hmm.
that still be hanging on that tree.
What's the name of that variety?
Triple Crown.
We have an eclectic really mix on our caneberry row, and Capri was still talking about maybe we should rip out some of the less flavorful ones and putting more of the like the Triple Crown in.
Yeah.
My grandparents always grew young berries.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They were huge fans of young. They had a big
hard to get now.
They had a big row of young berries in their backyard. And I remember as a kid going and when they were in season just picking bowls and bowls full of young berries. And then there again, my grandmother would freeze them.
Yeah. Youngberry is one of the parents of the boysenberry. And in fact, when started Knott's Berry Farm, that was previously Youngberries. And then a guy named Rudolph Boysen, he was actually raising chickens up in Sonoma. He had been experimenting with berries and he had this one berry that he said was distinctly different from everything else. He left it up there. Somebody dug it up and put it in. Remember the days when we actually had nursery cans that were cans?
Oh, yeah.
So they brought them down in metal cans and then he planted them. And then Walter Knott discovered these things and the rest is history, as they say.
My grandkids love gooseberries.
I don't know that I've ever had a gooseberry.
They love them.
We were talking about the Knott's Berry Farm because we were up there last year or earlier in the year, and that chicken diner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all those rides that were behind there. He started out putting a couple rides to pacify all the people that are waiting in line to get chicken.
Right,
and so that's how Knott's Berry Farm
and Boysenberry
became
pie.
One of the first amusement parks because of that.
Yeah, they were known for their fried chicken dinner. Yeah. For years
very popular.
And years. Yeah. But do they still do the fried chicken?
It's still there.
Is it really?
Yep.
Oh, it's been decades since I've been to Knott's Berry Farm.
I had been there since 80 something. It was wonderful. I had a lot of fun.
What else did, figs.
Figs.
Figs came in. We stopped carrying bare root figs a few years ago. The attrition rate on them was in bare root is just not, it's not great.
It's not worth it.
So we switched over to the sleeved ones and have much, much better.
I'm going to have to come and get one because the last hurricane that came through here last year, whenever that was, when mm-hmm. we had like 40 miles, just took my, was it the Panache, the tiger one?
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that one.
That is a good one.
And so I got to get another one.
Boy, and I tell you though, when you're planting figs, so in terms of gopher fruits, I would say fig is the number one choice. A fig would crawl over its dead grandmother to get at your fig tree. I mean, they go after, and probably lemons are the second. Yeah. But I will tell you, a gopher can smell a fig from 2 miles away, and mm-hmm. he'll come and chew it down for you.
They're happy with my broccoli. We grow a lot of citrus. We have two orchards for our residents, and they love the citruses. I mean, we used to grow. I inherited a whole bunch of different varieties, and little by little, we've resorted to. If something dies, I'll put in an apple or tangerine and or some form of citrus in there, and they just do so well. And apples are good.
Apples are good. We're eating the last of our pink ladies right now, yeah. and a couple Braeburns, and then we're done for the season.
Yeah, it's nice. You get some very late ones, you know, pink ladies. There's a lot of sundanners that are still hanging on the tree. So those late season apples are terrific.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman, John Clements, and our special guest, Roy Wilburn. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticultural news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew? Or want to learn more about the show? Or how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. That's gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at the same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.